thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Sidekick, where we delve into ancient societies, the ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic.
Hi, thank you for coming to the Skeptic Psychic. My name is Richard, and with me today is always such a warm, talented, exuberant, wonderful person, my sister Kimber Rodriguez.
Hey, how's it going?
Going all right. Just been working, sleeping, and packing. It's no fun.
So just so everybody knows, there'll be about a week or two without an episode during Richard's move to Roswell. We hope after this one, there'll be an episode going through November 5th, and then we'll be off till November 26th. So just to let everybody know, so that way you're not wondering what happened to us, where we disappear to. Is that correct?
Yes.
Nothing new on my end. Just the usual working and living life, watching spooky shows and ghost shows, getting ready for Halloween. Do you have any plans for Halloween, or will that be when you're on the road heading to Roswell?
I don't have any plans for Halloween, being the fact that we'll probably be packed everything up.
Interesting. I might be getting together with some friends of ours to watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
One of my friends has never seen it before, and unfortunately, we'll be watching it live. We'll be watching it on Hulu.
It's interesting to note, I was at the store the other day, and they actually had the 45th anniversary version of it with the extras, a director's commentary, a commentary with Richard O'Brien, and the audience participation version.
Interesting. We were telling my friend about the audience participation, and she wishes she could see it live because she said she would be willing to do the sacrificial part of it since she's never seen it before. She would be down for that. But unfortunately, down here, there's nothing like that. So did it leave you with anticipation?
Not really.
Anyways, what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about the lizard people. And for those of you who probably missed my original recording of this, it sounded a little bit like this. Just kind of being, hello, all you wonderful people, and welcome to hear about the lizard people. Who are they? What are they? And how are they? Now, we're not going to be talking about the government conspiracy of that every one of the world leaders are actually lizards. No, or reptiles or anything like that. We're going to talk about the myth, the legends. Well, the only lizard people that we do know of is Eric Sprague, who goes around in the carnies as the lizard man.
Yes, so. And for those of you who are not aware of him, he has his body completely tattooed and has had some surgical altercations done to his tongue, his forehead, and a few other parts to make him look like a lizard. And I will see if I can find a picture to share of him as well, so that way people can see what he looks like.
Now, basically, in 1982, a curator for the National Museum of Canada in the beautiful province of Ottawa conjectured a possibly evolutionary path for a dinosaur called Stenolacocaris, and suggesting it could have been evolved into a similar body plan to humans. Over the geological time, you know, that if they didn't die in the Great Cataclysm, he believed it would have three fingers, one of them being, what would you call the word, opposable. And be bipedal, which means walk on two feet, and would probably have a toothless beak, as with most modern reptiles and birds. Also saying, well, possibly that the genitalia, which is the naughty, naughty parts, would have been internal, and it would not have any type of mammary glands, and would have to feed its young, as some birds do, on regurgitated food.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It would have actually required a navel, as a placenta aids to the development of a large brain case. I don't know if they would carry them to term, but yeah. That's the theory on what exactly would be a dinosauroid.
Interesting.
We also jump ahead to 1934, or jump back, I should say. I jump back to January 29th, 1934, where Jean Bocquist wrote breathlessly about the search for a lost civilization of lizard people and their buried treasure. These days, you can go ahead and explore the tunnels under downtown L.A., but to understand exactly what he was talking about, he believed that underneath Los Angeles were a series of tunnels that laid siege, being sort of a pile of gold, as well as golden tablets. They'd already driven a 250-foot into the ground, being on the old abandoned property in North Hill Street, overlooking Sunset Boulevard, Spring Street, and North Broadway. G. Warren Schofield was a geophysicist, mining engineer, who dug this shaft. And according to him, Schofield was told by Hopi chief in Arizona, there was an ancient city underneath Los Angeles, and using his radio X-ray, was able to take pictures of the tunnels underneath. And with the tunnels underneath, would have been, you know, a little area where they slept, they eat, sort of a little town type area. Back then, they were kind of the snake people, pretty much. The only problem is no one heard anything after 1935 on what whether he found anything and whether he was supposed to get the permits or.
We were able to find a drawing of these supposed tunnels, and I'll go ahead and post that in our gallery so that you can check those out as well, of where these lizard people were allegedly living under the town of Los Angeles, California.
Definitely.
Now, there are two different theories as to where reptilians came from. Some people believe that reptilians evolved on the Earth millions of years ago until they were able to venture into space. And they reappeared during the age of the Sumerians. This was simply a decision for them to return to Earth. Others believe reptilians come to us from a constellation called Draco, that they traveled throughout the galaxy and then discovered Earth. They assimilated here on Earth and helped to propel ancient world into an age of enlightenment. Some of these reptiles were thought to have bred with humans and created a crossbred offspring, and are supposedly responsible for such feats as pyramids. I always get kind of miffed when I hear people say, oh, well, things like the pyramids and Stonehenge and these other things, that they had to be created by aliens because there's no way humans could have done it. To me, that is really shortchanging the human race. I do believe, you know, we are a very intelligent life form ourselves. And I do believe that these things could have been created by humans through technologies that have been lost throughout history. Who's to say that 50 years from now, the new society will come across something like a cell phone and think, oh, well, humans are too dumb to create this, so it would have had to be done by aliens. I mean, doesn't that just make you feel kind of insulted in a sense? To me, it does. What do you think, Richard?
First off, let's take a look at this. Okay, we are finding things that we can't explain recently, you know, certain areas of the world where we're like, how did they build this? Why did they build this? Who built this? Type of situation. We are told that the ancient man was basically 500,000 years ago was when the first type of caveman would happen. But at the same time, when they've done experiments in social studies and, you know, put people out there, within 2 to 3 years, boom, they're already in the Iron Age. So what took us 500,000 years to become a modern human versus the fact of many religions, Judaism, Muslim, Christianity, all say that we are the cradle of civilization started 5,000 years ago. Could it be, you know, UFOs? No, I don't think so. My personal opinion is I think that the human race possibly might have tried to extinguish themselves on several occasions.
Interesting. So getting back to reptiles and the whole alien race, supposedly they came here to enslave the human race. And there are many variations on how they have set out to do this. According to some theorists, the Anunnaki accomplished this by genetically modifying the DNA of primates to make them more suitable servants. Others think that the reptilians simply modified short segments of human DNA to make our forefathers more submissive. Some variations of this theory claim that humans can only use a small part of their brain because how the reptilians altered their brain structure. Now, this has actually been proven to be false. This has been a myth for I don't even know how long, that we only use 10% of our brain. However, neurology has proven that we do use all of our brain. There are different parts of the brain that factor into different parts of our anatomy, whether it be our central nervous system, our memory, our creativity. But all of the brain is used. So that has already been shot. According to Sumerian writings, this plot was foiled by a character named Enki, who was a god that came to Earth from a different planet called the Anunnaki.
Anunnaki.
Yes, Anunnaki. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Enki, at that time, freed the humans from slavery by telling them a secret, though we don't know any longer what that secret may be. However, some believe that his plan did not pan out for the long run because many believe reptilians still live among us. Some of the popular reptilian candidates supposedly include Elizabeth II and George W. Bush. Supposedly, leaders like this keep the humans of the world in check by poisoning our foods and distracting them with politics and war. Now, again, this, I don't really believe there are aliens among our political leaders, even though I do believe our political leaders are corrupt. But again, that's getting into politics, so I shall move on. The most popular belief among the theorists is that the strange alien group hopes to unite the countries of the world into the New World Order, which will give them complete control of our societies once and for all. As you have mentioned, their appearance, I do have that information here, and they can range anywhere from 5 to 12 feet tall. Draconians tend to be taller than the reptoids and have scaly skin and reptile eyes and are uncommonly strong. They do not wear human shields to blend in society, but instead use vibrations to alter the way they are perceived by humans. That's very interesting. I have heard different stories from different people. And it's interesting, a lot of these stories I've heard are throughout Arizona and New Mexico, even some in New York City, where people have, out of the corner of their eye, or maybe for a brief moment, seen a person take on a reptilian form, and then in the blink of an eye, flash back to a human form. So that's really interesting that they can use those vibrations to appear human if they choose. However, there also is supposed to be hybrids that exist among us, and they are not aware that they are reptilian at the same time. So how do you spot a reptilian or a hybrid? Again, most common way to catch a reptilian in action is to watch for what most people seem as camera glitches. They will be either Caucasian or have light skin and had to have green, hazel, or blue eyes. Oh my gosh, I have blue eyes. Does that mean I'm a reptile?
No. Your jaw does not pop out.
Or their eyes change color. Uh-oh, Dad's eyes changed color depending on his moods and what he was wearing. Was he a reptile?
Right.
Are we the descendants of reptiles?
No, I don't think so.
Also, they may have some sort of scar or defining feature on their face that makes them stand out. And this may be an attempt to cover up the roughness of their skin. They say if you want to catch a reptilian, monitor their appearance in photos and videos. Believers claim you can easily spot the differences between a human and a reptile or a hybrid if you watch for several key clues. One of the most popular is the appearance of their red eyes and images. Again, camera issues. This is very common for people who take pictures on a low-grade camera. Okay, again, I have to stop here. Red eyes has been around for as long as people have been taking cameras. Again, it is an issue with the camera and the flash turning the eyes red. So how they can say that this is an identity or a key factor in how to identify a reptilian does not make much sense to me. What are your thoughts?
Flash of light behind you or ahead. We actually did at one time when Jim Scott and I were kids, had a picture of us and we had red eyes. It's a flash.
Yes, I've had several pictures of red eyes.
It happens.
Yes. Moving on. Why don't you tell us about a sighting of these supposed aliens?
Well, how about if I tell you about a report back in July 14, 1988 in Bishopville, South Carolina, on the edges of the wonderful Scape Ore Swamp. It's in Lee County, by the way. Lee County Sheriff's Office investigated a report of a car damaged overnight while parked in a home in the area of Browntown outside of Bishopville. The car reportedly had tooth marks and scratches with hair and muddy footprints left behind. The sheriff, Liston Truesdale, noted that it was the start of various claims and eventually coalesced in a story about the lizard man in a swamp. Prompted by the news of the vehicle damage, 17-year-old Christopher Davis reported to the sheriff that his car was damaged by a creature he described as green, wet-like, about 7 feet, which is, for our Europeans, 2.1 meters tall, and had three fingers, red eyes, skin like a lizard, snake-like scales. 2 weeks prior, according to Davis, he was driving home from work at a night shift at a fast food restaurant when his car got a flat tire. After fixing it, he saw the creature walking towards him. Davis got in the car and began to drive, but the creature was soon atop his car. He applied his brakes, causing the creature to roll off the car, giving Davis enough time to escape. Now, the increased media and newspaper publicity prompted further reports and soon became a tourist attraction for visitors and hunters. Local radio station WCOF offered a $1 million bounty to anybody who could capture the creature alive. On August 5th of that year, Kenneth Orr, an airman stationed at Shaw Air Force Base, filed a police report alleging he encountered the lizard man on Highway 50 and shot and wounded it. He presented several scales and a small quantity of blood as evidence. However, Orr recanted this account 2 days later when he arranged for a lawfully carrying a pistol and misdemeanor offense on filing a false police report. According to Orr, he hoaxed the site in order to keep the stories of the lizard man in circulation. Reports have gradually declined at the end of summer. They speculate the sightings would most likely have been the cause by a bear. In 2008, CNN mentioned the lizard man legend about the story of a couple in Bishopville who reportedly damaged, including blood traces. The blood traces were actually found to be from a domestic dog.
Local sheriff may have said a coyote, a wolf, but who knows? In 2010, the TV program Destination Truth, which is basically hosted by one of my favorite, I'm sure your favorite hosts as well, Josh Gates, who I'd love to sit back and have a cold one with, went and checked out the legend of Lizard. And every year they do have a festival celebrating the Lizard Man.
Interesting. Yes, I love Josh Gates. I need to look for that episode and see what he found on it, if he really found proof of this Lizard Man. Now, just a little bit of the popular conspiracy theories that are out there, not dealing with political. The first one comes from Paul Benowitz, who was a highly respected physicist. He happened across secret projects being conducted by the U.S. Air Force and the NSA at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico. He believed that these projects were related to cattle mutilations and local alien abductions. While investigating, he was led to the town of Dulce, New Mexico.
Dulce.
Dulce?
Yes.
D-U-L-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
There is a base that operates there that is said to have served as a base of operations for a group of unfriendly extraterrestrials. And they used the seventh level of the base to conduct genetic engineering experiments. These are commonly identified as reptilians. Benowitz did take his claim to the UFO community, and it quickly spread and were accepted by many believers. Yet there were those who did not accept his claims, and this could be due to his quick descent into madness and admitted interference with military and government agents of misinformation. Another one is David Icke.
Yep. I-C-K-E.
Yes, David Icke. I'm sorry about that. And he was originally a pro football player.
When we're talking football, we're not talking about American football. We're talking about what we Americans would call soccer.
Yes, thank you. I was just about to say that. He had to retire early due to arthritis. However, for a while, he was content with serving as a sports broadcaster and representative for the Green Party. And he also descended into madness when a psychic told him that he had a special purpose on Earth and he would receive a message from the spirit world. He then wanted to be known as the son of the Godhead and was convinced that the world was being run by a group called the Babylonian Brotherhood. These were reptiles who used shape-shifting to allow themselves to blend into society as prominent figures and leaders. The goal of this brotherhood was to create a new world order and give them complete control over the free world. Regardless of what Icke's goals are and that of his state of sanity, he is and always will be one of the pioneering voices of the reptilian conspiracy. And last but not least, there is the infamous account of Herbert Schirmer, where he encountered a UFO on the side of the road in Ashland, Nebraska. At first, all he could remember was his encounter with a strange craft hovering above the side of the road. Later, he agreed to undergo hypnosis to recover hidden memories of what had been lost. He recalled being escorted into the spacecraft and interacting with beings who looked like humans, but were dressed in gray and white uniforms with the picture of a winged serpent on their chest. Theorists everywhere were quick to link the accounts of reptilians accounted for the human appearances of the entities as being due to the shape-shifting abilities of these reptilians. Throughout time and history, there have been a lot of different reptilian creatures, so to speak. There was Serapis, who according to legend was the first king of Athens. He was part man and part serpent. Looking at this, it sounds like he would have been a Naga, as his waist up was shaped like a man and his bottom half was a serpent.
Now, what exactly is a Naga?
I was just getting into that. A Naga is a mythological creature who is half man, half snake or serpent. He has the top half, or she has the top half of a human, and the bottom half is that of a serpent or snake. It is said that Serops did teach the Athenians to engage in marriage instead of, you know, messing around with everybody they could find. He is also credited with teaching people to read, write, and bury their dead with ceremonies. Legend also tells that Serops is the one who decided that Athena would be the patron goddess of Athens.
Almost sounds like Quetzalcoatl.
What's Quetzalcoatl?
You don't know who he is?
I do not. Tell us about Quetzalcoatl.
He was a blonde-haired, blue eyes, some people believe reptile, that visited the Aztecs, who brought them culture and religion, that sort of thing. During that time, that they were kind of a peaceful type of people. They didn't do any type of sacrifices around his time. The other gods got very angry with him, and according to legend, they drove him out of their main capital. And he gave a warning that someday he shall return again and force them in type of revenge. And when the Spanish explorers came around, guess who was their leader? Cortez, who happened to be a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Spanish. But yeah, he is a creator deity, having contributed essentially to the creation of mankind. Unlike it, the other Aztec gods or Mayan gods or anything like that, he was very much not wanting to do any type of human sacrifices. According to myth, he was the son of the primordial androgynous god Ometekel, and his brother was Tetzalapoca. They basically ran him out because the other guys kind of got jealous of him.
Also in Greek literature, there is the tale of the Gorgons. These are three sisters who have venomous snakes instead of hair.
Not true. Medusa was the one who was a Gorgon who had snakes for hair. Okay?
Okay.
Her other two sisters were not Medusa's. Just to clarify.
Interesting.
I would like to clarify that, because the reason why she became a snake-like woman was because supposedly Poseidon or Neptune forcibly took one of the maidens of Aphrodite's priestess in such a way that Aphrodite, instead of blaming Neptune, Poseidon basically took away her beauty and made her into the Medusa creature. Now, her other two sisters balked about that. And so one of them was turned into what we would call today a harpy. And the second one was turned into, I believe it was a naga or something like that. All three sisters were turned into snake-like creatures. Now, Medusa, who was her name was Medusa Gorgon, was the one that we know today as being the snake woman with the wild hair.
Interesting.
That's just what I remember from my Greek mythology.
Either way, she did have the power to turn people to stone if they made eye contact with her. And she was slain by Perseus.
Yes.
Also, there was the Lamia, who was once a beautiful woman that captured the attention of Zeus. Hera became angered and jealous of this, as she always did when a woman was gaining the attention of Zeus. So she destroyed Lemia's children and turned her into a terrible monster that devoured children out of the grief for losing her own. Then several accounts say that she was half woman, half serpent. Looking at Egyptian mythology, there's also Sobek, who is a deity that is said to have a man of a body and the head of a crocodile. He has been said to appear as a Nile crocodile or a West African crocodile on occasion. He was the god of fertility and military power, and considered to be a protector, especially when it came to dangers that were associated with the Nile River. And there are several different mythologies of lizard-like people. So I'll go ahead and post this link in our show notes in case anybody wants to find out about other mythological creatures that are part man, part reptile. But I do want to talk about the explanation of the myth of where this idea of lizard people came from. a lot of it points to Robert E. Howard. Howard's work, Shadow Kingdom, first introduced the idea of serpent men to literature as rulers of a secret society that controlled the world. His book incorporated the idea that reptilians could have thrived in the lost worlds of Atlantis and Lemuria and could have been responsible for the great technologies of ancient worlds. As we discussed before, I think this is really taking credit away from human race, but some people actually believe this. Many of Icke's theories come from this literature and other authors who were inspired by Howard. Other explanations point to the Sumerian writings as cause of the reptilian hysteria. It is undeniable that these writings are a source of inspiration for many, and there are many mythologists that believe the writings hold some truth, however, very small. Again, with ancient writings, it's really hard to tell what they are supposed to portray. I think we misinterpret a lot of it since we weren't there to actually view these things. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the ancient writings of, like, say, the Sumerian and the Egyptians' writings and the whole gods being aliens and the reptiles theory?
So basically, what you're talking about is possibly the Anunnaki from the time of the Sumerian and Sumerian Mesopotamia type areas. It's kind of an interesting thought procedure. I mean, a lot of precedents kind of rose into it because a lot of the biblical stories in the Quran, as well as stories in Judaism, do actually talk about the creation and the gods of men, the sons of gods and the daughters of men, giving birth and form to mythical creatures. It's kind of an interesting thought, you know. I really can't give a definite on this.
Interesting.
Other than that, any recommendations or anything like that?
I don't have any recommendations this week. However, if our listeners would like to recommend anybody, they can always email us at info@skepticpsychic.com. Also, I'd love to hear what our listeners think of this topic and what, you know, their opinions are. And I would love to carry this over to our Facebook group, which is Skeptic Psychic as well. So we invite our listeners to check out that group and continue this conversation over there. We also ask our listeners to rate us at Apple Podcast and leave a review. We do prefer 5 stars, but we will take whatever you give us. We will read the reviews on air.
Any new reviews?
Not at this time.
They don't love us, but we love them.
Yes, we do. We love all of our listeners. And if you'd like to be on our show or you'd like to recommend somebody for the show, you can either message us through info@skepticpsychic.com or through our website on the contact. Anything else you'd like to add this week?
Just that we hope you're enjoying this. And again, you know, likes, comments. We're on Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, and just about close to being on every podcast that you would like to check us out. So we give you 5 stars. Remember that.
After this recording goes live, it'll be 2 weeks before you hear back from us with Rick Spoof. Our next podcast is going to be pretty exciting. We're looking forward to it. And yeah, we'll see you then. Sweet dreams, everybody.
Right. Unpleasant nightmares.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.